Welcome to Season 3 of Marketplace Kingdom, the podcast series from the Empowerment Institute and One Rock Strategics. Our ongoing purpose is to provide biblical perspectives and practical strategies for understanding the times and advancing God's kingdom right where you are. We're committed to presenting thought-provoking conversation and encouragement by bringing you guests who share their own stories and insights on being authentically Christian and demonstrating Christ's love and lordship in their own professional and personal spheres of influence. We want to share ideas that you can use to bring Christ's redeeming and transforming power to your world in your day-to-day lives. I'm DJ Swanger, and my co-host is Pastor Dave Heisinger. Whether you're with us live or listening to the podcast replay here in the U.S. or anywhere around the world, we're glad you're with us. Our guest on this episode is our friend Dirk Iles, U.S. Outreach and Strategies Leader for International Steward, a truly unique global ministry engaged in transforming lives and cultures by raising up leaders and influencers to advance the kingdom of God and impact lives, cultures, and nations through the gospel and the message of biblical stewardship. Dirk's message? Keep it simple and strategic. In this powerful conversation, we learn about a growing movement of faith and action that is changing lives and impacting whole regions around the world. Fueled by an understanding that biblical faith calls us to a faithful stewardship that involves more than simply our money, this movement is seeking practical ways to demonstrate Christ's love in every area of life and every sector of society, from the U.S. to rural and urban Central America, Africa, and India. Locally led, guided by the Holy Spirit, employing clearly biblical principles, and discovering ways that the good news really can be good news right where you are. We hope this episode is an encouragement as you advance God's kingdom, and we hope it provides some insight into ways that you can keep it simple and strategic. So, Dirk, welcome to Marketplace Kingdom.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm honored to be with you.
Yeah, glad to have you, Dirk.
Yeah, Dirk, why don't you tell us a little bit about your personal story and how you ended up where you're at with International Steward and where things are going there?
I don't know if you want me to go as far back, but I'll just start. I was raised in a home that was, we were basically Christian because we weren't anything else. But I came to Christ in my first year of college. Not a radical transformation from the standpoint that everything in my life absolutely changed. And yet it was very radical from the standpoint of I was in my dorm room and made a plea, a cry, because I'd seen the reality of Christ in a few guys on our football team and a few folks in a little group called Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And I was a pagan that was pushing all the envelopes. And the first 2 months of college were a new way to push envelopes, yet without having to worry about mom and dad. But I had a pretty dark, my first ever really dark spiritual experience when I sat in a bar in a little small town that our college was situated in, and it was the first real deep spiritual move that I'd ever felt when I looked at the seniors. Part of them were on the football team, part of them were just seniors in my dorm, guys that I knew from campus, but for the first time I saw the darkness that was where I was going to be in 4 years, and that was all there was going to be, and it settled deeply in me. And as the Lord does, a guy was beating the tar out of me in football practice, yet helping me up, and then he'd knock me down again and help me up, and normally was encouraging as opposed to the way that most seniors are to freshmen. And the great thing about that was I just decided to pursue him, and that led me to a meeting, and it led me to people sharing their testimonies. I didn't even know what that word meant. And I listened enough in prayers during the beginning and the ends of the gatherings that if I could put together something that I thought kind of sounded maybe like the Lord's Prayer and maybe just a plea for help, in the middle of the night I asked God to save me, and that I knew that walking on my own was not working and that my life was heading in the wrong direction. So it was very clear that the Lord did make a move in my life, that my plea was heard. It was radical in that when I woke up the next morning and we had to go up to the dining area, I was pretty certain that everybody knew that I'd come to Christ. Everybody knew that something was different about me. I was even nervous about that because I don't know how to say this, but you know, maybe it was an emotional experience, but it was also really the first spiritually alive experience that I'd ever had. And it was interesting that by the middle of the day, the Lord had healed me of my desire for alcohol, my desire for drugs. I knew by the middle of the afternoon that all the immorality that I was pushing the envelope on, that those days were over. And then it was kind of a beginning of this journey that leads me to right here to say, God, I don't know what you want me to do, but I really want this life to count for you. I was, you know, in the basics of the first years of college and trying to figure out, am I going to be a doctor? Am I going to be a professor? All the things that you're given the opportunity to pursue. And it wasn't very long, and I knew that if I was as lost as I was as a high school student, that somewhere along the line I wanted to be engaged in the lives of young people. I figured out pretty early in my college experience that most young men had not been given fantastic models of what it means to be a man. So that was kind of working on my heart and my soul. I left college after my sophomore year to go travel in a Christian rock band. What a hilarious experience that was, but it again was engaged in making an impact in the lives of young people, and finished my school at a small university in Indiana, and then kind of spent the next 10 years in vocational ministry. Loved the opportunity to have my calendar be about the things that I believe were most important. I was in the lives of young people and their families. I was involved in high school ministries on campuses. I played guitar a little and was able to use that to make an impact. About 10 years in, I began to have some unrest, and I don't know what that was all about necessarily, but I think it was just the next stages of asking what is the Lord really calling us to be and to do. And there was no scandal, but it was a time for me to step out of ministry. And I had some friends that were engaged in commercial real estate, and the market was exploding, and so we kind of found work in some of the services that are provided for commercial and residential real estate. It wasn't long until I was thrilled with the idea that I no longer got paid to pray, but I had to figure out what it meant to be a disciple, a guy who sits in the pews and a guy who's just trying to figure out how do I hang on to my faith in the middle of this journey. And I loved pastoral ministry. I mean, I loved it. I loved it, loved it, loved it, loved it. But this was a new stage. And so I began to be a part of a kind of a thing that the Lord really spoke to me about over a number of evenings when I was out doing janitorial and floor services in the early 2000s, that I wanted my life to really be about the integration of faith right into the marketplace. What does it mean to be engaged with people in meaningful ways? And how does faith become a reality, whether you're determining who you're hiring, the profitability or the lack thereof of an organization, how you do sales from a standpoint of having integrity? That was a great journey, the next 6 or 7 years. In the midst of that, I launched a coaching business that I worked with entrepreneurs. And in that work with entrepreneurs, whether I had believers as clients or not, I really focused on the integration of faith and capitalism. How do you bring these principles, this life, this enthusiasm into the marketplace so that every moment can be filled with meaning, the sense of kind of the mystery of every single moment if we're open to what God is doing? And then that led me into International Steward. In my coaching, I was led to this little organization that was teaching principles of the Bible as the focal points of helping ministries around the world become locally led, locally sustained, and then would have the capacity to flourish and multiply. In all the work that I'd done, learning and growing, this message just knocked me off my chair. It really got a hold of me. And I began to see that the very questions that I was asking, all the way from when I first came to Christ and God rescued me out of everything that I was and was doing, and in the life of the pastoral ministry and then in the marketplace and trying to web and interweave real faith into the heart of 40, 50, 60 hours a week in the marketplace, it really came down to a simple prayer that we teach worldwide, and that is, Lord, what do you want me to do today with all you've trusted me with to honor you and to advance your kingdom? And the message of biblical stewardship that everything is God's and we are the stewards or the managers, whether we're effective or ineffective, that's the role that he's given us from the very beginning of the story in Genesis to the very end of the story. That story just captivated me. So over the first year, I was able to kind of step into a significant leadership role, and over the last 3.5 years, I've been the president of International Steward, and we have been just blessed with this kind of sense of new calling, a radical shift to move from an organization that was primarily a training organization that meant that there were folks from the United States flying across the planet to do training, which in its time and in the history of our organization was vital to cast the vision and to plant seed. Over the last 3.5 years, what we've been blessed with is that seed has begun to grow, and we've been able to invest in specifically now a global team that right now is 5 and soon will be 7 leaders, 3 folks in East Africa, a guy in West Africa, a leader in East India, more of a rural setting, a leader in West India, more of an urban setting, and then a leader in Central America in Panama City, Panama. But what we've changed the whole model about now is, how do we coach, how do we train, how do we pass the baton from an organization that was centered in a vision and mission of some folks from the United States? That's awesome. It's wonderful. But how do we see measurable and exponential growth as these teammates and the folks that they will multiply in and the folks that they'll lead into greater places of leadership? How do we walk alongside them now, really as teammates who offer our gifts, skills, talents, and abilities, but we hand off the global leadership to one of those teammates? So it's been quite a journey. I know that I covered a lot of spans. It was probably longer than you asked for, but that kind of is the brief on how I moved from coming to Christ and really saying that, Lord, what have I got to offer to make an impact for you, to 2017, where I'm still asking that question, Lord, how do you use what you've really trusted me with, uniquely trusted me with, to make an impact for you and your kingdom so that your kingdom can explode and expand in ways that are so far beyond what I could have ever dreamed or asked for.
That is pretty much precisely what I was asking for. And that's great. That's a great kind of synopsis. as you're looking at International Steward and your relationship now as an advisor with Empowerment Institute and the Emerging Seven Mountain Alliance, what do you see as the crossover? Our listeners have heard a lot from us, from Dave and I, about the vision, and you caught this vision kind of independent of what we've done. Although you and I have known each other for 25 years, and we've been talking over coffee and over the back fence for a while, quite literally. Talk a bit about that marketplace presence of the Kingdom of God component in International Steward and how that's emerging and the raising up of leaders as a focus and how that pairs with your involvement now as a member of our team as well.
That's awesome. If it's all right, what I'll do is I'll start with a short kind of how I'm seeing these guys, our global teammates, kind of launch ministries into their arenas, their cultures. In one of our leaders, they are beginning to work with 16 to 26, 27-year-old young men and young women. And at the heart of what they're doing is they are using the principles of biblical stewardship to call people into a life of a very intentional, very focused kingdom perspective to bring the reality of God's reign into whatever arena. And so in this movement of young people, they are talking about the biblical stories of how this message of biblical stewardship is kind of rooted out and seen, and then no matter what the circumstances, no matter what the setting, and then as you and Dave and I have talked over and over again, no matter what the calling that you feel that your life may be going towards, whether you're going to be a person on the assembly line, whether, as one of my friends started a janitorial service because they said that's what they love, or it's working on a doctorate to teach theology or anything in between, whatever arena God is calling us into, to use that arena as the platform to bring the reality of God's reign into it. And so what's kind of interesting that this leader is doing is they're saying, now I know that many of you are thinking, well, then what we need to do is we need to give up our work, we need to give up teaching at the high school, we need to, whatever it is that we're doing, we need to give that up and we need to go be missionary someplace. And they're encouraging them not to go be missionary someplace unless that is clearly what the Lord is calling them towards. But to say, what would it be like for you to be a person who by God's grace is a kingdom advancer by the way that God has called you now, according to your gifts, skills, talents, and abilities, your perspective, your resources, your relationship networks, according to your sense of who God has uniquely created you to be, so that they can bring the reality of the kingdom, whether that's in any position in society. And what they're seeing is that these young people walk out of these sessions not feeling like, oh, that was such an extraordinary weekend where the Lord really met us, but now it's Monday morning and I'm just going to go back to what I always do. These leaders are asking these young people to begin to form groups, to begin to ask questions about how can we, in our culture, whether it's education, whether it's entertainment, whether it's government, whether it's arts, whether it's finance, whether it's families, you know, whether it's the marketplace, whatever it is, how can we, what would it look like if we were intentional about bringing the kingdom, the reality of God's reign, the reality of his presence into every arena that we're in? And so young moms are impassioned. People that are starting into the marketplace are impassioned. Teachers are saying, oh, I get it. My kingdom call is not just, hey, it's really great on Sundays at church, but it's every day. And so what we have been blessed with, as Dave and Don, you guys, and we've talked about, is that it has been kind of a unique avenue to bring this message of the Seven Mountains, of bringing that transformation of culture into every facet of culture. But for us, it is really connected to say, this is a way that we can be a part of expanding this message and the fruit of that message into every arena. And so for International Steward US in the United States, what our global teammates are really working with us now on is to say, we've thrown out some options. Let's aim in this arena. Let's aim in this arena. And what we found is that there's a lot of stewardship dialogue. And in the United States, there are 30 ministries that talk about stewardship in some way. We are asking for the Lord to help us find a pattern or a pathway to be engaged with that little window of 17 to 23, 24 years old, to maybe be a part of what would raise up a student volunteer movement that would reflect what took place in England in the mid-1800s, kind of the same kind of thing that took place in the early 20th century in the United States, but to not have to retrain people or to bring it in after they've started all these new movements, but to say, man, if you're going to go be a mom who is a kingdom advancing mom. If you're going to go into the marketplace, be a kingdom advancing marketplace person. If you're going to go into medicine or health or whatever it is, be a person who does that with the kingdom as the driving force, the thing that pushes you and the thing that pulls you. And for us, it comes back down to that simple little prayer. Lord, what do you want me to do today with all you've trusted me with to honor you and to advance your kingdom? So push back and ask me another question, because I don't know if I got close to the target. But as I've said to you before, Don, I sure got excited about that. So did I hit in the arenas that you were thinking?
I think so. One of the things that strikes me as you talk now and has struck me in other conversations is that so many organizations talk about stewardship, and some of them even talk about it in a way similar to yours of wanting to create an atmosphere in which ministries become self-sustaining. But the focus is always monetary. That is the central critical issue. Do we have enough money to meet budget? How do we get more if we don't? How are we stewarding the money we have? And as you talk about stewardship in this kind of context, it seems that you're discussing a broader notion of stewardship. And really stewarding the opportunities that are there in our presence as believers in various sectors of society, as well as the financial issues.
Well, yeah, one of the reasons, and Dave knows this as well as any of us, that stewardship is one of those phrases that gets misused so badly, because in lots of congregations across the United States, and it doesn't matter which movement you're in, when it's Stewardship Sunday, we know that there's a couple things going on. We're going to be talked to about tithing. We're going to talk to about offerings. We're going to talk about that we have a wing to build, or debt to pay off, or a new building to build. And again, of course, that is a part of it. I mean, that's a part of stewardship, but it is such a small part of it. And so, you know, there is no question that as International Steward began in the early 2000 timeline, that it initially, when the training and the courses went across the oceans, one of the things that was, it was like, okay, is this finally kind of the silver bullet? If we're here, we'll have our connection to really be able to figure out how to raise money. But what we saw over and over and over and over again was the stuff that, you know, Don, you and Dave and I have talked about over and over again, is that the message is about every aspect. And so pastors, ministry leaders, organizational leaders began to ask the question, okay, well, what have we been trusted with by God? And again, like I've said, it's relationships, it's networks, it's what has God blessed us with that is unique in this culture? What gifts, skills, talents, abilities, what sense of callings do people have? What do they want to see as the transformation of their culture? And then to listen to those things and to go after those with passion. So the reason that I think that what we're doing not only fits with the Seven Mountain model and what you guys are doing and what we get to be a part of, is that you have stretched our view of what stewardship and this message of biblical stewardship is all about, because it says that it's for every arena and every aspect of life. With International Steward, one of the realities, though, is that we do talk about finances. And we talk about budgeting, but we never talk about budgeting from a United States perspective. We take biblical principles, but then what happens is that in each of those arenas that I mentioned, in East and West Africa, in East and West India, in Latin America, the leaders in those arenas are the ones that have begun to communicate it in their language. So you take biblical principles that can be communicated in the heart languages of the people and in the stories of the people. And then these dialogues about finances and funding ministry is just a part of the dialogue of really seeing people, really seeing families, ministries flourish, because it's an all-in, not just the silver bullet of finances. And what we face, probably as much as anything, is the devastating effects of two things. One is what poverty / scarcity does to a heart set and to a mindset. It robs dignity. It robs the sense of purpose. It robs this sense that if God has really given us a calling, can we authentically believe that He really could provide all that we need? Is it true that we will see things that are beyond anything that we can think or imagine? Or does that have to come from funding outside of our local resources? And so it creates this sense of, well, we could never really get there unless. The other thing that we fight is this sense of, you have a lot of great Christian people and organizations who have given. And in that giving, they may have, not because their intention was this way, but because they were trying to respond in some ways to the gospel, or a lot of ways to the gospel, but they've added to this sense of scarcity and brought with it now dependency and even entitlement. And this sense that, okay, that if this gift is offered, well, three or four times down the line that this gift is offered, now there is a sense of entitlement that I deserve this. And how could you not do this? Because you know that our ministries need this. And so what we encourage the global team that we work with, and what we encourage donors who are a part of International Steward, is that we always want to be thinking about, are our gifts, are our talents, are our abilities, are our callings, and are our finances? Have we thought enough about, will this really build up the body of Christ in another culture? And are we really willing to say, man, we're willing to step back so that they can flourish, and then they can take the message, they can take the work, and then they can begin to invest in the Seven Mountains in ways that you and I could never even conceive of, because they're the solution in their arenas. And so what we do is we recognize that along with teaching, along with training, along with praying, along with encouragement, along with coaching, in every one of those, including finances, we look at it from a standpoint that it's kind of a cycle that we launch. And as we launch, man, there's lots of resources in every one of those arenas. And as we grow, there's still lots of resources in every one of those arenas. But then the leader is going to ask the question, is this ministry becoming locally sustained? People, talents, gifts, abilities, networks, finances, marketplace skills, education skills, family skills, entertainment industry, all those arenas that they're highly aware that this is where we want to bring the gospel. And did they become locally sustained? Because as they become locally sustained, then our fourth part of that cycle, so we go launch, we go grow, we go sustain. The fourth part of that cycle then is then how do we begin to multiply this? And in what arenas? That might be, okay, it might be a ministry to a school. It might be a ministry in the marketplace. It might be a health ministry, a ministry to help the local hospitals. Or it might be one that they say, okay, the church was center to this transformation in the way that the church ought to be, right? They saw that reality. Now, are we going to help plant a new church? Maybe it's outside this culture into a new culture. But what we have seen is that we can participate in launch and grow, and we can celebrate, sustain, but then what they're gonna come up with as the multiply is fascinating, and it calls us to see how great and how wide God's calling to reach his world is. So yeah, finances, Don, Dave, crowd, finances are a part of it, but they are not the part of it. If finances are the silver bullet, the danger of that is that what we end up with is dependency and entitlement, and that's a vicious cycle. If it's holistic, and looking at the culture holistically, through the eyes of the local leaders, then a ministry, a movement becomes locally led and locally sustained. And man, there's all kinds of opportunities for not only local, but regional and global transformation.
I'd like to jump in. This is Dave. I'd like to jump in with a couple thoughts, a couple questions. So the question is, you've given us these steps, and I've learned them from you, and I like them. Launch, grow, sustain, and multiply. And my question is, can the multiply aspect, is it known in the launch? And is the full picture and the purpose of even launching for the purpose of multiplication? Or are people surprised by multiplication when they finally get the sustaining? So I'm wondering, is the DNA a multiplying DNA, or is multiplication a surprise?
Thank you so much, because it's right in the heart of what we're going through right now, Dave. And so let me just give you an idea. So we're expanding, and you know, we're making this move this year that International Steward will be led by someone outside of the United States. And one of the things that one of our leaders from India said was this. He said, we need to ask the question, are we about establishing offices? Are we about multiplication of leaders? And I said, well, that's a really great question, because I think that I've been knowing that in my heart it's multiplication of leaders, but I clearly probably have been communicating that it's about establishing offices. And so I had to step back, and that's one of the beauties of bringing a global team, where what we're establishing is that whether in the United States or Africa or India or Latin America, that there's a team of equals, and in those team of equals, that the first among equals will be the global team leader. But that dialogue is a great challenge, and what it said to me was this: yes, multiplication is in the DNA from the very beginning. And I think that Don and Dave, you guys have experienced this, that a lot of times in the United States, we don't think maybe as well as we could that it is about advancement of the kingdom, that it is about multiplied. No matter what arena, it's about bringing the reign of God into this arena. What I have found with my brothers and sisters in the global team is that they can't fathom that you would be about the gospel without multiplied being absolutely essential. So it is maybe something that in the United States we've got to keep going, remember it's about multiply. Remember it's about reaching your neighbors. Remember it's
about... It might be a U.S. problem.
Yeah, but in their world, those guys are always thinking. They're always thinking about that it means it's geographical, it's social dynamic of the culture, but they're thinking of it multiplying into every arena. And so they'll come up with things like, well, as we hear what you're talking about, we need to think about how do we help the rural farmers become more productive with the crazy seasons that they have and with the capacity for the farmers, the Christian farmers, to be a light to the rest of the community by showing a pathway for every farmer with livestock, with grains, and with rice, with corn, that every farmer, that the whole community would be enhanced by a Christian farmer saying, look what we've been able to see, what could happen. So they think multiply way quicker, way faster than we do. It's a part of how they've learned the gospel.
Can I give a quick picture of something that just happened this past week of what happens when multiplication is in the DNA? It happens to all the elements of stewardship. So I'm a pastor of a church that was devastated 6 years ago with a brokenness, and I arrived and spent a number of years healing and restoring and rebuilding. We wanted to wait, so we launched some new things, we're growing, but we wanted to wait until we were a church about 400 attenders, because then we wanted to plant a church, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But God had different plans. And so this past Sunday, because multiplication is in our DNA, we have an immigration clinic. We have homework help for people that don't speak English. We're giving away food. We're in the high schools with Young Life. We are helping celebrate Alpha courses all over the Twin Cities. We're not about ourselves at all, right? That's in our DNA. But here we are at about 250 to 300 people in attendance, waiting for 400 so we can plant a church. And the Lord sends us this passion to plant a church. And the people say, we can't do that. We'll lose all our people and we won't have enough money. So here's what happened. We did it anyway, right? Yeah. And we sent 50 people in the beginning of March to go to another city 15, 20 minutes away with a church planter. And with them were just incredible families. And their giving was between $35,000 and $40,000, right, total. Mm-hmm. So we sent all this money away. We sent 50 people away, and we commissioned them, and this past Sunday, they had 150 people in their new church plant, right? And here's the cool thing. Because multiplication is in the DNA, we have never lost any numbers financially or numerically in attendance. In fact, we're growing, and we have more money than we can imagine. How is this possible? It's possible because multiplication is in the DNA, because faithfulness to what God has initially designed is greater than establishing each one of those components of launch, growth, sustain, multiplication. They all have to be infused with the end result. That's stewardship. And I'm so grateful that you are bringing these principles back into the United States, because we get stuck right to number three on sustaining, and we forget who we really, really are and who Jesus called us to be.
Yeah, that's awesome, because around the globe, Dave, we would we would hear that story. A church in Kenya decided they were going to plant two churches because the Lord had brought this message into their lives, and how could we not? And the church was around 160, 170 people, and a year later they have three churches that are over 200 people, right? And they asked the same kind of questions, but it was because multiplication, like you said, is in the DNA. And I believe we need to ask the Lord to open our hearts and our minds in the United States, that we would be that bold and that courageous to have that be a part of who and why we are in new and spirit-filled ways.
Awesome. Awesome. I have another question for you. I'm excited about the concept of sustaining. Now, what does sustaining look like if it's not just financial? What does it look like in terms of the definition of sustaining? We've come to a point of maximizing all of what God has given us. What's the definition or criteria for sustaining?
The way that our leaders will talk about what this word means is that clearly financial is a part of it, right? Okay. I mean, because that is a very measurable sign that we're not counting on the denomination, we're not counting on some folks from Houston, Texas, we're not counting on a trust or a foundation from Europe or from the United States. So clearly finances, and it has to do with cash flow, it has to do with meeting budget, it has to do with all those kind of things. So finances is a part of it. But they'll talk about it also from the standpoint of what ministries do we know God is calling us to right now to make an impact in our culture, and then do we have those people? You don't want to just have people that will do stuff that aren't gifted or aren't called into those arenas. So you have that sense of, is God giving us a sense of calling? Is he clearly opening pathways for us to bring the reality of his presence in his kingdom? And as that opens up, may not be within the next 2 days, but God opens the door for the right people to be fit in, to be mentored, to be coached, to be discipled into folks that will take on that next ministry. So sustainability always has as its sense that it's going to keep moving towards multiplication. And that's why we kind of always use the phrase that it's sustained and it's flourishing. Because there's this sense of you don't want it to be just this stable little, isn't that neat? We're all here and we're all our needs are taken care of. But sustainability will always be an issue. That is, the Lord calls people to multiply. It may be locally that we're asking for God to raise up the right people, the right leader, to bring someone in from the health arena or the arts arena that could help us meet the next vision. So when I say, and when we say sustained, we do not mean dormant and just waiting around. We have this sense that it means that the present needs are being provided for by God, and there is a healthy sense of what the next steps are. And that's one of the reasons, Dave and Don, that we do not say things like self-led, self-governed, self-sustaining. I know that people don't mean it badly, right? But what we always talk about is locally led, locally governed, locally sustained, that God has shown up and provided what has been needed for those ministries to be at the place that they're ready to flourish and grow. And the people and the callings and the gifts and the skills and the talents and the abilities, the networks, the relationships, and that sense of financial, the reality of the financial is there too. So sustainability does not mean dormant. Hey, it's great, we finally got here, so let's kind of close up and be our own little group. It always has that challenge of growing beyond.
Got it.
I'd like to backtrack just a bit, Dirk, to something you said earlier, because it informs, I think, a little better for some of our listeners what you're saying now when you talk about locally led or even regionally led. You talked about the handoff of leadership to regional leaders around the globe. And in the history of American missions and the history of global nonprofit organizations, relief organizations, businesses, anything originating in the United States, there has been a trend to talk about local leadership, but expect franchises to emerge. What happens in this next plant of International Steward or Peace Corps or whatever looks, for all intents and purposes, like the American office, only it's in Karachi or Bombay or Nairobi. And when you talk about multiplying and sustaining, it seems like you're talking about something a little different, that you're handing off leadership and you're handing off formation and direction to these folks to take a framework and develop in ways that are at times radically unique given their particular cultural context. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, that's really good. I think we can affirm, listeners, Dave, Don, that if we just try to multiply or train or coach American principles, it will hit its wall. So we have worked very hard over the last years to make sure that what we're multiplying are really biblical principles, so that they can go across cultures, transfer into cultures, and be enculturated in a way that it fits. So for instance, if we wanted to talk about, well, one of the ways that a ministry can work towards financial stability and sustainability would be in the United States, in our part of the United States, there are golf outings every single weekend from about Memorial Day to Labor Day and beyond. Well, a golf outing does not make a lot of sense. So the goals are not around events or United States strategies for leadership development, leadership multiplication, fund development, but they're simplified. We talk about it being the KISS principle, which we say is keep it simple and strategic. And strategic means that it is core in the heart of God's message to us in the scriptures, so that through the Holy Spirit, wherever we're at on the planet, we're asking the question, what does that mean for us? So there is a simplification down to the core principles. And then there is someone in rural India or in West Africa, how does that apply within that culture? And like you said, Don, I think that's a really great statement, that early on I think we would have thought, well, of course, let's franchise these, just like McDonald's. The reality is that if ministry is really going to have a cultural and then regional and global impact, then it's got to start with those biblical truths through the work of the Holy Spirit in and through the lives of those leaders whose lives have been transformed by the gospel and hearts have been opened in ways that may be unique ways by this message of biblical stewardship. So one of our leaders is asking the question, okay, how do we take this message, bring it into the heart of local churches and a network of churches, but we're going to work together, United States and this culture, to build two homes for widowed families that it will transform two families, and that will then lead to the transformation of culture. And they're doing all of that stuff in a biblical way of training these families who have lived in makeshift lean-to houses that get knocked down about every other year, that they really will have a home that has been built by church members engaging local workers in those skills and those trades, training those two families to be good stewards of home and property and finances, and then using the finances that those families will give to plant more homes to bring transformation for more families that could have never built a home before. I, or my teammates here, or our board, we would have never come up with that idea. Ever. We would have never come up with that idea. And that's what's happening in each of the cultures. They're doing things in their engagements with their networks, in their engagements with their churches. They're bringing this message into their culture in a way that we could never have anticipated. And if we would have said, well, hey, you know, these guys are doing that over there, to try to multiply that in a culture that wouldn't even be the way that they'd think about that. Or, hey, we do that in the United States. Why don't you consider doing that there? So it's a movement about, has God raised up the right leaders? You know, I apologize if it sounds too American business, but Jim Collins in Good to Great says, we're always getting the track going and trying to find leaders along the way. Jesus did the same thing. We would have never chosen the leaders that Jesus chose. But Collins says, get the right leaders on the bus and let them determine the direction. And like I said, we wouldn't have chosen those guys, and yet they transformed the world. And so that's what our model is. Our model is to say, God, we're counting on you to raise up the right leaders. We have some criteria. They're very simple. They're all biblically based. And then they bring this message into their cultures, into their regions, in ways that we couldn't have fathomed. And yet we get to see how God is expanding his kingdom and transforming lives by just coming alongside and walking the journey with them.
You know what, Don? Dirk is giving us a culmination of a lot of the podcasts we've been engaged in. He's giving us vision. He's giving us steps for leadership. He's giving us coaching, right? He's giving us a model that the church can bring, but it transcends the barriers to the mountains, right? It works in the classroom. It works in the political arena. It works in the business arena. It works in the entertainment world. And it works individually. It works corporately. So, Dirk, if you're wondering why we're quiet, it's because we need to let you speak, because what you're telling us is a summary of really what it's taken us 26 podcasts to do. And so I have friends all over different places in the world. I'm thinking of a friend. He lives in Kenya, and he wants to start an import company from China, and that maybe has a storefront to it. He's already a successful businessman in 3 or 4 different ventures. And he's asking me to see if there are people who would like to invest. I really trust this man. But what I love about him that I don't see at a very strong level in the United States. It's there in the United States. But in this man, it's built into the core of his motivations. Is this. Kenya needs Christian businessmen to be so successful that they move into all the regions, remote and populated regions of Kenya, with godly, ethical, selfless, transformational people and principles, and that Kenya is changed by the Christians engaging in society, not building fortresses. And he's saying that the church is confusing because the church thinks it's it. And it is, but the church isn't it when the church is about its building, it's about its pews, it's about its land, it's about its size, and etc. But the church is it, according to my friend, when it is about penetrating, providing businesses for widows, providing businesses in regions so that hospitals can move into those regions because they're growing so quickly, providing businesses in regions so that roads are developed, because in order to gain industry in and out of that region, we need the government says, oh boy, we love this industry, we've got to build the roads, providing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all of a sudden, the Christian becomes the leader and the government begins to listen. And it is fashionable for business to be moral, honest, to pay its workers worth their due, to invest in the people of the region rather than rape the people of the region like they've been trained to do from others that are not Christian. You see, these four principles you're giving us, launching a godly foundation, growing for the purpose of the transformation of the community, sustaining so that you can have a foundation from which to multiply and multiply and multiply and watch whole nations, starting with little cities, counties, regions, nations, and then nations and more nations transformed by the advancement of the kingdom of God. So we're with you. And we're saying, go, yes, international steward, go, be successful. We celebrate this in the authority of Jesus Christ.
Well, what I'd like to do is to line up to get Dirk to come back so that we can pick up right where we left off.
Great.
And talk about how some of these principles apply and can be frameworked and open sourced in the way that he's talking about with the folks who are part of this emerging alliance of seven mountain-minded people that we are encountering. Dirk, I'm assuming that that would be agreeable to you? You're not worn out and don't want to talk to us anymore?
No, it's kind of obvious that you kind of got me going there. So yeah, I'm honored to be here today and honored that we would consider something else. So thank you.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, and thank you for listening. I'm Don Swanger.
I'm Dave Heisen.
God bless.
You've been listening to Simple and Strategic, a conversation with Dirk Iles. This and other episodes of Marketplace Kingdom are available for free online listening, download, and non-commercial redistribution under a 2017 Creative Commons copyright. Costs for our podcast and ministry activities are covered by the generous support of listeners like you. For information on how you can sponsor a podcast or donate to our work, or to find out how you can have Dave Heisinger or myself as a speaker for your organization or event, email us at empowermentfriends@gmail.com. That's empowermentfriends@gmail.com. If you want to catch up or binge listen to past episodes, they can still be accessed at onerockstrategics.podomatic.com. And be sure to share Marketplace Kingdom with your friends. You can also follow us on our Facebook pages, Empowerment Institute and One Rock Strategics. If you're a Twitter user, you can follow our activity by going to @DJSwanger, and you can join the conversation at #OneRockTribe. Until next time, remember, you are important to Jesus and to His kingdom right where you are. Have a great day and a blessed life.